freezer break?
Ladies and gentlemen, now that our distinguished council member is here, we'll get going. We waited for you specifically. No, you're good. So we appreciate all of you being here this evening for our Cache Valley Transit Board of Trustees meeting for November 15th. And we'll officially call the meeting to order. There's one item that we would like to add right now to the agenda. And we have a new member of the board who's with us, Patrick Jenkins, representing the City of Logan. Replaced Richard Anderson, who we were grateful to have with us for a while, but I know Patrick a bit, so... Why don't you share a little bit about yourself personally? Would you mind?
Thank you.
Little history and where you're from and family.
Great. Will you stand or no?
Okay. And kind of speak into the mic, just for the record.
Thank you. Well, I appreciate the opportunity to serve on the CBTD. I grew up in Logan. I grew up in River Heights, just down the street from Mr. Pond down from me. His son was a colleague of mine. I ran away from home at the right age of 22 and went to graduate school in Spokane, and there I was able to participate in a lot of different civic-minded things, including the city council. Moved back here about 5 or 6 years ago with a wife and 5 kids, so that was a big change, and I live on the Cliffside Bench and I'm grateful to be a part of this, so thank you for the warm welcome, those of you that I've met already.
Thank you very much, Patrick. So we need to officially swear Patrick in. Who's going to do that? Okay, please, feel free.
So, Patrick, we'll have you stand. Do you raise your right arm? And repeat after me. I, and state your name.
I, Patrick Jenkins.
Having been appointed to the office of board member.
Having been appointed to the office of board member.
To the board of trustees for the Cache Valley Transit District.
To the Board of Trustees for the Cache Valley Transit District,
do solemnly swear that I will support, obey, and defend.
Do solemnly swear that I will support, obey, and defend
the Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of this state.
And the Constitution of this state.
And that I will discharge the duties of my office with fidelity.
And that I will discharge the duties of my office with fidelity.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Curtis. Thank you, Patrick. It's good to have you with us. Next item's on the agenda, acceptance of the minutes. Could we do the minutes and the agenda together, please, with one motion? But Curtis reminds me that we have added the one agenda item, so let's have the agenda with the swearing in of Patrick approved. Do we have a motion to accept the minutes and approve the agenda?
I so move.
Okay. I second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you very much. The next meeting of this group will be December 8th in conjunction with the annual Christmas social. And sometimes we've had the meeting here for a short time, budget-related approval, and then we've traveled. I suggest that Todd, let's not do that. We'll announce that the official meeting of this board is at Logan River Golf Course Clubhouse. We'll have a short meeting there, and then we'll adjourn the meeting and we'll go right to our social. Anybody see a problem with that at all? I think that'll work fine, and sure saves us
driving around. Didn't we do it that way last year?
Did we?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. That I must have suggested that last year, so that was...
And that's a Friday night, right?
Yeah, so Friday night. So meeting and social, and please bring a guest or a spouse or whatever. And I believe Todd has some really good entertainment lined up for us, right?
Teresa's helped us with that, yep.
Okay, along with, I think the caterer is Iron Gate Grill, and they do an exceptional job, so that'll be great. Do we have any questions or comments for management or the board?
Are we going to meet at the same time, 5:45?
Yes.
Okay.
Meeting time, 5:45. Thank you for that clarification. So any questions or comments, item 5 there? If not, we'll... proceed with the next item, or item 7 there. Todd and myself and Ron attended Thursday of last week, I believe, the Cash Growth Summit, kind of an annual event. Some of the staff I worked with at Bragg helped plan and organize that. I think we had 138 people there, I was told. Many elected officials from Cache County, a number of staff people, planners, some developers, real estate people, probably a few average citizens were there talking about growth in Cache County. And one thing kind of struck me, the first thing, we had people there from Envision Utah. That's a group that's been around 10 years based in Salt Lake that helps do county and community planning events. They've done things for the state as a whole. And so you see the little handout here. So everybody had a little clicker at this meeting. Was anybody else there besides Ron, Todd, and I at that event a week ago? Had a little clicker there, and it kind of struck me, and I thought it'd be worth mentioning here. So the first question, what is the most important issue facing Cache Valley? So the top left of your little handout. And so all 138 people that were there had the opportunity to vote. Air quality, 24% said that's number one. 12% said water quality and quantity. 2% said agriculture. We obviously didn't have many farmers in the room. Housing was 18%. I frankly said housing's number one. Everything I hear is there's a serious housing shortage here in Cache County. And then transportation was 28%, economic development 13%, 2% other, not sure what they were. But if you add transportation, 28%, to air quality, and they are quite closely related, I would assume, I thought we at least ought to call it to your attention and maybe have a little discussion. And then you see the rest of the little charts there. Cache Valley, you remember the population sheet I handed out a month ago, and I have some for those that weren't here. Cache County's population, according to the official state projection for right now, is about 128,000 people. This says 126,268, but we have more people every day born, and a few move in. So we're somewhere around 128,000 people right now. And the projection, official projection, says 185,000 by 2040. And so the little pink squares on the bottom there, and the next page shows, well, what's Cache County or Cache Valley going to look like in 2040? So the yellow depicts what we have now housing-wise and development-wise, and you add the pink to it, which is another 2040. What's our population in Cache in 2040? So we go from 127,000 to 185,000. So that's a pretty good increase. And so it's going to take some work and some planning. And how are we going to manage that kind of growth? And some say maybe this is a little conservative. So I invited...
The Gardner Institute has altered some of those statistics a little more because they've refined it a little bit more.
Okay, I'm not aware of that, and I've talked to the director.
And I think that they think that there's going to be the same amount of growth that they've talked about, but it's going to be concentrated a lot more on the Wasatch Front than they originally thought. I mean, I think probably these are real numbers in terms of what's going to happen here, but we won't have quite the, according to what they said at Utah League of Cities and Towns, there won't be quite the impact here in Cache Valley that it will be in several counties on the Wasatch Front and down to through Provo and that area. Provo will.
And the reality is nobody knows.
Nobody knows.
That's true. Because, you know, births and deaths are easy to count. They're recorded every year, but the migration in and out is the challenging thing, and it's based on jobs, and it's based on housing. And so that's the tough thing. One event, Pam Perlick, I know quite well, the lead demographer for Kim C. Gardner. She used to work for state government. And Kim C. Gardner is part of the University of Utah now, Kim C. Gardner state contracts with them, kind of move the state demographic staff over there. And she indicated to me that, you know, one event, one major economic event, one big employer could alter these projections. One leaving, which we saw in Box Elder County, you know, 7-8 years ago, we saw two leave Box Elder County. Lazy Boy and what was then Bicol, you know, cut way back jobs. But now the growth is coming back. So we don't know, but that's the best projections we have. So I invited Jeff Gilbert here. Jeff is the transportation czar, I'll call him, for Ash County. Jeff, do you want to take a minute and talk about, you know, your feelings on what we learned at the summit? People are concerned about air quality, transportation. And I know Todd mentions the MPO regularly, and that's who Jeff is, the Metropolitan Planning Organization, or he's the director of that entity. Do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself and your background and what you do?
Sure. So Jeff Gilbert, Cash MPO. MPO's been around since, I guess, 1990, or at least the early 1990s. So we are tasked with transportation planning for the what's called the Logan Urbanized Area. So the Census Bureau sets a boundary of what they consider urbanized, and they have a specific definition. So for us, we deal with the more urbanized portion, so Smithfield to the north, Wellsville and Hiram to the south is what constitutes our urban area. So I answer to the 10 mayors of those cities. We have a board that is tasked with multimodal, so that means we're involved in not only road planning, kind of long-term strategies, as well as having a role in programming funding, particularly federal funding, for that urbanized area. Todd's on that board, what we call the Executive Council, and he represents a full voting board member there, and we have a UDOT Transportation Commissioner, and then we have an extra city council person from Logan by deference to their size. So that's the board that we work with. We, like I said, are tasked with long-range transportation planning, so we try to wrestle all the cities and have diverse interests there and try to figure out, at least in terms of the regional, what we call regionally significant transportation projects, and we come up with a long-range plan. I'll pass this around. So we're required to do basically a 20-year look into the future, and we're required to apply what we call fiscal restraint to it. So that means we can't just come up with pie-in-the-sky stuff. We have to kind of look at what assumed revenues are and try to calibrate our plan based on that. So that presents a bit of a challenge. So we identify road project priorities, bicycle, pedestrian, and also we work with the transit district to identify transit priorities. Now, we're lucky the transit district and your staff is really competent, and we don't try to meddle too much in the planning. We try to support like the short-range transit plan and those efforts, and then try to roll that in. You have good staff and a good organization that helps be visionary in that. So we try not to meddle in that, but just support and kind of dovetail. So Todd and I and the transit folks, we work together on kind of identifying programming. When you have an MPO like us, the federal government requires that any federal funds that are expended either on road projects or on transit projects be part of what we call a transportation improvement program. So our board approves that. So these are things mostly in the federal areas, and you probably dealt with it in some of your planning, but some of those federals for bus replacement and different investments in the transit district. We largely, and the board largely, defers to the transit district and to you as a CBTD board on where you spend those and how you prioritize them. For the most part, our board just endorses what you bring to us. But each year we have to do that TIP, which kind of puts in place the approvals that the Federal Transit Administration has to allow those monies to flow. We've had a good working relationship with Todd and making sure that we have that happen. But this plan, this is a longer-term vision. We update that every 4 years. We're going to be updating that in the next couple of years, and we'll look to the transit district and that short-range transit plan and your board priorities to inform that planning process and help us articulate that future. You know, a couple issues that I see in air quality is going to continue to be an issue. We have to make sure that we're legally obligated to do what's called air quality conformity on this plan. So we're given budgets by the EPA of emissions in what we call mobile sources, and we have to analyze it and model those emissions all the way out to the year 2040, or however far out our plan goes. And we have to prove to them that our emissions are within those bounds of that budget. And it's a little up in the air, pardon the pun, as far as what we might be getting new budgets. There's some things are a little messed up in the federal government right now, at least at EPA, or we can't quite get straight answers of what's happening there, but there might be some revisiting of that. We might have a new budget to deal with in terms of emissions, but we have to look to that and make sure and prove that our emissions out to the year 2040 are within that standard. Fortunately, the rollout of more stringent emission control technology on cars, you may have heard of Tier 3, those are coming out starting this year in 2017, and those have much higher magnitude of emission a reduction built into them. So that's helping us to where we can, so far we've been able to prove that budget. But even for transit, and it's mostly for like fixed guideway, if we were to move to those sort of things is what we have to look at for air quality. But air quality is certainly going to be an issue. Just the growth, I guess, as Roger identified, you know, the public identifying transportation as a key issue, important issue. We saw that in some of the elections of that kind of getting more prominence. We have some challenges. We're one of the largest, if not the largest area in the entire nation that's not associated with the interstate freeway system, which presents challenges for us. We know, like Wasatch Front is realizing, that we need a broad range of strategies. I know to meet our travel demand, and we quite honestly haven't probably explored those, or we need to start looking at them. What I mean by that is, you know, in Wasatch Front, they were looking at I-15, and they were looking at the long-term needs for that. And I can't remember what it was, but they analyzed it, and they decided that you would have to build something like 15 lanes on I-15 just to keep up with the demand. So then they started looking at what the solutions are. Well, you could build double-decker freeway, horrifically expensive and highly obnoxious, but the traffic engineers love it because they love building stuff. They were the only ones that loved it. But they looked at that cost, and, well, what if we got more creative and looked at policy things like they're looking at fare-free transit. What if they did fare-free transit on that corridor? What would that shift over? And, you know, and people will say, well, that's costly. How can we do that? Well, look at building a double-decker freeway and see what that costs. And as transportation planners, we're going to be forced to be more creative with looking at areas. We kind of, as engineers, instead, we kind of try to build our way out of everything and just build more lanes and build more intensive infrastructure. Well, that has its limits. And we're recognizing, we're further. We're certainly not facing the same constraints that Wasatch Front are, but eventually we're going to face those same things. We're trying to look at policies type solutions, and changing behavior, and those sort of things, which is kind of out of our realm. But we're going to have to start looking at that. But capacity for our roadway network. We're highly dependent on these arterial roads. the mix of transit and how that fits into our future. Quite honestly, one thing we need to struggle with and work through is what kind of future does a higher intensity transit solution have for us. That's like either light rail or what we've looked at in our plan is bus rapid transit. When does that make sense? What should we be doing now to maybe look for that? It may be a long way off, but our board has been a little reluctant. We've tried to get them to kind of look at that, maybe do some initial feasibility work, but there's been some reluctance on to start looking at that. You know, that's one of those long-term things that's out of the political cycle of some. So it's kind of looked at as pie in the sky, but I think we need to start getting a handle on that and planning for that, what that future might be. And this next plan update, we can start to look at some of those things. Not sure what else to address, but I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Are there questions for Jeff? I guess, well, go ahead, Ron, please.
I got a recommendation on double-decker freeways.
Okay. Don't do them.
Didn't work well in California during the Lone Crater earthquake.
Yeah.
They had a tendency to collapse.
Call them sandwiches.
Yeah.
So, Jeff?
Yes.
Perhaps, when do you have meetings? Are they open to the public? Are they, you know, where can we find more information? I kind of know the answers, but I just thought maybe.
Questions. We've kind of moved to a bit of a flexible, almost as needed basis. Our board members have other responsibilities in their city, so we try to be sensitive to their time. So, but we do post that on our website when we have those meetings. Typically, they're on a Monday night. We probably won't meet till January. It'll probably be the third week in January that we meet. But we try to keep the website, the CMPO, and it's just at cashmpo.org and kind of keep that posted and populated with the latest information. But, you know, I'd be happy to come sit down with anyone and kind of overview anything that we can. You know, one other hot button issue that we'll have is funding and taxes are always hot button, but you know the county is moving to pursue the quarter cent sales tax. We call it, well, it's referred to as Prop 1, at least in Wasatch Front, which is a mix of transit funding, set formulas of transit road and funding that gets distributed out to cities. The great thing about that enabling legislation is it's highly flexible in how it can be used. It's not as constrained a lot of in terms of you can use it for active transportation, bicycle, pedestrian, transit, road maintenance. So the county in next year looks to be moving towards that. And hopefully the CMPO can be a help to coordinate and kind of inform and have discussions about that along with the transit. And certainly the transit district has a stake in that in terms of how they helped in terms of funding. I don't know if did that answer your question, but the meetings are absolutely open to the public, so please come. And,
where do they help?
We're generally held in the county administration building. No problem with extension. They are taking over our whole building, and we struggle to get in our meeting room sometimes. So sometimes we bounce them over to Logan City Hall.
There seems to be past elected officials at the county level and the city level over the last 5-10 years kind of emphasize new roads and don't worry so much about bus transit. Is that going to be the same in the future, or do you think with the growth that you've described, we need to be concerned about the balance there?
No, I think it'll change. One thing is, and I don't know how it'll shake out, but we have probably the biggest changeover of elected officials on the CMPO board with this last election that I think I've ever seen in my time at MPO. I don't know, Bragg's probably similar. So in Cache, we'll have quite a few new mayors. I don't know if the, you know, I think they're, I would characterize the MPO board and elected officials as certainly supportive of transit, just kind of finding that right mix, and when it becomes funding competitive, you know, that's when it's a challenge. In the past, we've had maybe one or two mayors that have been pretty passionately against. I remember when we talked about bus rapid transit, there was a mayor that said, you know, that's a Chicago solution or whatever, but it's not for us. And we're going to need to have those debates and talk about what is right for us. But the importance of it, if we don't have these conversations now and preserve corridor and think about in the future, particularly if we're looking at like a dedicated lane on the Main Street corridor, or at least associated with the Main Street corridor, if we don't get ahead of that, it's going to cost a lot more. It's going to impact neighborhoods and businesses and all that sort of thing. So, you know, I think we just have to start having those conversations. I think political support for this sales tax increase, in my opinion, is going to be a pretty broad support. And the reason I say that is, the legislation was constructed and had a certain formula amount for transit. And you remember there was some pushback of saying, well, that's not right for Cache Valley, that formula amount. I think it was 40% going to transit. And there was felt they wanted to have more flexibility, so they went to the lead. Jack Draxler did a bill that allowed that to have some flexibility, and you're all aware of that. But the floor on that, I think, is at 10%. So there's a floor that has to, at least that amount has to come to transit. And the cities, I think, I don't mean to presume this, but I think the cities are going to be highly supportive of pursuing that and backing politically the county to do it, because quite honestly, they get a substantial amount. And the amount they get is formula-based that comes to them with no strings attached, which is great money for them. And I think that what I'm hearing from the cities is more or less general support for that. They're desperate. The gas tax money that goes for maintenance of roads has eroded over time. This legislature did a little to help that, but still, you know, if you talk to cities, they're putting substantial amount of general fund revenue into just keeping up with road maintenance. So the cities are desperate for that fund, so they're going to be motivated to back it. The county's equally desperate, if not more so. So I think just out of desperation, if nothing else, you know, there's enough stakeholder and beneficiaries of this that I think that I think the city will back it. That will give the political cover to the county to put it on the ballot. I think with some good education outreach, the public will support it. They've shown a history of that, reflected by that interest in transportation, and they've been willing to pay for that. So I'm optimistic that that can be at least a useful new funding source that will help us both on road transit, bike ped, and help increase those revenues.
So are any alternatives to gasoline tax being suggested at the legislative level?
There is some, and there was a task force that we just formed, and Todd was active on that, and they really kind of blew the doors off when we're looking at all sorts of things, including vehicle miles travel type taxing approach, where you're taxed on how much you drive rather than what you buy at the gas pump. So there's a lot of things going on. Those are quite a ways off, probably just in practicality and technology and stuff like that. But you know, the gas tax is a difficult thing. It's ever decreasing as fuel efficiency and shifts to electric vehicles. That dependence on that, it's non-functional over time. So something's got to be done. Sales tax is where they've kind of looked to make up a lot of that gap. Quite honestly, I don't know that that's the best way to do it if I was king, but it's politically a more acceptable way to do it. I'm of a believer the more closely you can associate a tax with the use, the better it is, and sales tax, you know, isn't necessarily associated with transportation, but I'm not in charge of taxing policy, but I think some things, and Todd's more aware of this than me, the thing, they recognize that they got to be more creative in generating revenue and how that's going to happen, because the Federal Transportation Trust Fund is scheduled to go broke again. The gas tax isn't keeping up with that. At a state level, the road, the B&C road funds, which are what the cities get for road maintenance, that's it's not keeping up. They've done some stopgap measures with increasing the gas tax and indexing it to inflation, which will help some, but it's certainly not the full solution.
Well, I think, too, they may have to flip it even further and do what they did to the Water Conservancy Districts, which was have them identify all their capital assets, which are roads, and save for their replacement within the district or the area.
Yeah.
And plan for their replacement. So yeah, it may be we have to flip it totally.
Yeah. There's some pretty creative things. Provo does an impact fee kind of thing, and there's some kind of creative things that are being looked at. But yeah, it's going to better, transportation funding is going to be ever increasing challenge, as is everything funding.
Thank you, Jeff, very
Thank
much.
You.
We appreciate your presentation. Appreciate the good work you do.
Yeah, appreciate you guys
too. On our behalf. So, and that's kind of an important lead in to what we're going to talk about, finances for Cache Valley Transit. Next item is Glenn Schmidt, our distinguished board member, is going to talk about third quarter financials, and then if you would go right into the proposed budget that we're going to have a discussion on.
Okay, I think everyone received the information from the management about the third quarter, and there aren't any surprises that I could see in there, and I think we're on schedule in most of our areas. Just a couple of things are that are highlighted. Our interest revenue is higher just because of it says here, interest rates in our cash balances have both been higher than expected. And then under federal and state grants, state and federal grants is higher than expected because we received the grant funds for the bus purchases. And that's always a timing thing that takes place as we go through the years. And then we discussed this before. We sold two buses for approximately $26,000, and that's under number three. And those proceeds are restricted because they were purchased with federal funds. So they let us keep the money, but then they restrict our usage so that we can purchase other buses in the future, and that's a good thing.
Was that each bus or the total?
That's the total.
Okay.
And of course, we went through the process of doing the short-range transit plan, and the services for that were a major item. And then on the capital outlay, we were able to purchase the buses that we were planning to purchase, and so that budget is basically spent as expected. And so the capital items, which you would expect, are basically spent at this point through the third quarter, a little bit left, but as you would expect, those have been spent. And everything else seems to be running according to what we would expect. Are there any questions?
So on the tires category, we spent just under $16,000. Are we still projected to spend the $95,000 in our budget?
Yes, we. The way the tires cycle through, it's been a couple years ago, the Michelin actually recalled every single tire that we had in our fleet, and we had to change all of our bus tires out at the same time. Now, over time, we're hoping that will sort itself out a little bit, but right now there's a huge concentration that comes due right at the end of the year. And so in this last quarter, we'll go through pretty much the remainder of that balance.
Okay. So the recall, they replaced them for free then?
Absolutely, okay. Yeah. We had brand new tires on every single bus in the fleet at that point.
But that makes it hard because you were rotating them through, so you would have five buses that whose tires would be old and
yep.
15 that'd be new and
yep.
then five more and then five more. And instead, you got all of them brand new at once.
Yes.
Or
so, yeah,
or
the
easier,
last quarter becomes very stressful.
You can change them all at the same time. Or easier, because now we can change them all at the same time.
Over time, it will spread again. I mean, because the buses, because of rotation for maintenance or accidents that occur and a bus is out, over time there will be some spreading again, but it may take some time before that spreading occurs.
As new buses rotate in.
Yeah,
out.
Exactly.
Okay, any questions other regarding that report? Do we need a motion to approve that?
Do we need to accept that? Usually we have, but
we have it in the past.
Let's have a motion. Do we have a motion to accept the budget report through September 2017? Do we have a motion?
I move to accept the budget.
Okay, just go ahead.
I'll second it.
Actually, you're in Sue Sorensen's
state tank there.
Where are we spread out?
Second by Ron. Any further discussion on that? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you very much. Next, we'll, Glenn, you want to go to the budget document? So
okay.
Let's make sure we're all on the same page here because we missed the numbers and thought, apologize.
The budget does have page numbers.
Oh, it does?
Yeah.
Okay. So there's a, they got a page?
Yeah.
In your packet, it's just the next down.
Okay.
So page one is a summary, and this is, we had this summary previously as well. And
this is what we had last month to have a chance to
right,
look at and
right.
raise questions on.
Right,
which
so
we
had
did.
This in our possession a month ago, and then we did ask Todd and Curtis to give us a more detailed proposed budget. On page four, you can see that. It gives us more detail, which is good. Gives us more to look at specifically. And so you've had some time to look at that. I know that several people have. I don't know that there was anything new. We haven't changed anything that I can tell as far from last time. So
we did have a couple minor changes.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, there were. You sent those out.
Yeah, we basically between October and November we had the 1 month of sales tax that came in, and so
right.
we updated the estimate based off of those actual results.
Right.
In the meantime, if anybody follow, I follow this a lot. Fuel actually went up as far as the price of a barrel of oil, and we saw a corresponding increase in our rack price that we pay on. And we've had to increase that baseline price that we're estimating out for next year. It caused fuel to go up about $40,000 for that estimated increase of about 20 cents per gallon.
So
what we were carrying
through. Couple years ago, we left it really high. When it
last year, we left it really low.
And last year, we cut it back?
Way back, yep.
Okay. Because we had it really quite high for, and we left it that way for 1 year thinking, okay, maybe it was just going to be a fluke, but then we adjusted it last year, so now we're having to ratchet it back up.
Yes.
Okay.
But to clarify, and maybe I'm misunderstanding your point, Gene, several years ago we used to have a wider spread in that, and over time the board said, let's narrow that spread down so there's not so much contingency in there. And so over time we've done that. And so even though we've adjusted the price based on what we see as indicators, we're still in a much more narrow contingency than we did, say, 4 years ago or something like that.
Right. So thanks, Curtis, for that. And so those are the slight changes that have taken place since then. And feel good about things that are there. I know there have been some members that have looked more closely at a few items, and any comments or questions from the body, bring them out.
On the whole budget?
Uh-huh.
Oh, okay. Can I have like 5 minutes?
Sure. We do have some people who have to leave.
Questions that haven't been answered.
And I appreciate all of you asking those questions, and I know the staff will respond to many of those.
Can I pass? And I got my timer, so I won't take any more than 5 minutes.
Thank you.
I know this is important.
No, we appreciate your efforts.
So I take sales tax very, very personally. I don't know if many people, I mean, feel like to have two auditors for 3 days just going through your books line by line, which I have. And then also I get audited on about everything. I'm not sure if I'm just that lucky or what. But one of my audits on sales tax, they find different things in the account there and different stuff. But first, so anything that doesn't stay on a car, where I do cars, is supposed to be taxed, and I didn't have that on there. For example, brake clean. If I buy brake clean, I buy it without tax. It doesn't stay on the car, so it's supposed to be taxed. So at the end of these 3 days, granted one of the thing was my fault. I bought a tractor that my dad's a farmer. I ran under his, so I didn't pay the sales tax. So at the end of these, I wrote a check out for $21,000 in sales tax at the end of the audit. So I changed the stuff that I've done. And so one of the reasons I got on the board was specifically before sales tax, because just the way to do the same thing with property tax. I know everybody has a hard time. At the end of the month, I'm going to write a check for $23,000. In property tax, so that's one reason I ran for city council, and unfortunately, in one way, I guess I got elected just because of that. But I had one employee's got in a wreck in our parking lot on his own time, coming back from his own on his own time and his own vehicle and stuff, and he ran into a car. He ran into a car in an adjacent parking lot, and then unfortunately, the person he ran into, he was an attorney. So the attorney sued my employee and myself, and we went to court, and I lost. I had to pay the difference, and I wondered why I would lose, and so I did the research, and that's what this one here is my research on that. So the research talks about the clock and off the clock and what it's for. And so after I read this, I was able to appeal it to see why I lost, and the second time I won. So there's quite a bit of difference, and if you read it, it talks about lunch hours and who is it. Anytime that somebody does something for a company, then they have to, the company is liable. They go for the deeper pockets. So one of the things is on meals, and that's one of the questions I brought up. And that's on the. And I apologize. I'm not very good at this.
And I got two. Just fine.
All right. I'm just way out of my comfort zone here. I'm normally like the back seat. But that's why I just questioned. One of the items is under the meals category. You know, we have the other accounts. And the others, we spend $10,000 on that, and now that there's 195 transactions, and out of the 195, there's 114 for $50 or less. So that exposes us to liabilities in my incidents, you know, because if they're on the clock, I mean, you got wages and stuff too. That's why I was concerned. The other one that I seen was the tires, and we talked about that. And to be honest, I guess I'm patting myself on the back because I came up with the same answers. I was just wondering if we're going to spend the 95. And when you clarified that we had a recall, that made me feel a lot better on there. And then I know I got 1 minute left. So I know we...
Take
2 minutes. Okay. All right. I don't want to go anymore. I know people have different feelings.
Take a breath.
Okay.
Take a breath. They won't have to hyperventilate.
Hey. All my employees want me to quit this position because I get too worked up. So I apologize. So out of that, I asked 23 questions through the email. Some got, and some were happy about it. Some didn't want to be included on there. But to me, it's a $6.6 million budget. We should all individually understand the budget. There's so many variables, and somebody has different interests. And I feel that the board, and maybe it's just me, that it's not a team effort to came with the same goals. He says, I personally like you guys, and I think you guys are fantastic, but we have different skill sets. I know for me, when we, on the parts, my definition there, you could read it as you'd like, we have so many fixed costs on here, that it's hard to see how efficient the shop is. And so the variable I would see is the parts, and that's why I asked the question of the part. Because if we dump the $4 million, or close to it, since I've been on the board, I would expect to see the parts drop down. The question we asked to improve it was because of hybrids. I thought that's why it hasn't, because we spend so much on them. And I'm glad to see that they haven't cost anymore, because we do have one. But as me and my different shops that I would try to analyze, if we sourced it all out, we should see it on labor and everything else out, but we've just seen the fixed cost. That's the reason I asked those on the questions there, and I got 30 seconds. But the same as we, with our short-range transit, you know, we spent $157,000 on this, and I just don't, and it's got such a short window, I'm surprised that we're going to spend so many different surveys of take of our time. Like I said, I asked 23 questions. Everybody was worried that we're distracting from their time, but yet we're going to add, I assume, five because the 23,000 is going up for security. So, and I didn't ask that question. If we're doing another survey for security, why that's doubling. But if we add five more surveys instead of just focusing on this one, and then we can add the other ones. And I think my time's up, unless we have more questions. But that's why I answer some of these.
Let me just make sure I understand. And so you, one concern or question you have is the budget amount for meals. And Todd did respond, I think, your staff did respond to that. Should we take a minute to talk about?
We can.
Yeah, and where does that money go? I know some of it's for the safety committee meetings.
Yeah,
this sort of thing.
I have it. Just one of the handouts is on this one here, if you want to refer to that one. This is 2016, the one I gave you.
What I want to do is more talk about the principle behind why we do what we do, and then, again, you can ask questions. If you go to page 2 of the budget, we talk about budget goals and what we're doing and what we're trying to accomplish. And then also on page 1 is the summary of the key budget increase requests. But with meals specifically, what we're trying to do is to make sure that we are conducting business. So some of that is, you know, when we're dealing with business leaders, where appropriate, where there's an appropriate business reason, then we might pay for a lunch or something like that. But it also is, we have an employee barbecue annually for the employees and their family. We have an employee banquet once a year for the employees and their families. These are things to help with morale, that help with acknowledging people's contribution. And then we also have, where business appropriate, folks are and may have a lunch. So Curtis, you have a couple other items that you want to talk about there?
No, just the banquet's for
the one banquet is a safety award. But also, we've had programs over the years, and this one is going away, but we've had a program where a meal with management. And one of the reasons that we did that was employee engagement. So it has been a great way, and I would say what we found is there's a life cycle to almost everything. So one of the things we put in here was a safety program, because our current safety programs met the end of its life cycle. It's been 3 years, and people start to wane on that it's not as exciting anymore. It's the same thing. We had a meal with management program where people could put their name in a drawing and then they would get a meal with management. And what we found is that was a great way to engage the employees. And we found when we take them out, they would open up to us and they would talk to us and they would tell us about their concerns. And so when we talk to you about that, we survey our employees, we do a formal survey process, but a lot of it's this conversation around a meal. And so yes, I understand the concern, but for us, it's led to a lot of great success. It's led to a lot of great information. And so those are things that we've done. Like I said, that program has kind of run its useful life. We started to see that people weren't as interested anymore. So that one's gone away. So you know, that's something that we've addressed and said, yeah, we're not going to need that anymore. But it's around employee engagement. It's around safety for the safety banquet. And it's around, you know, telling people thank you for what they're doing.
Any other specific questions that were not answered, maybe? And we all had a chance to see the questions and answers in the email. And thank you. You know, we appreciate your dedication and concern, Norm. Frankly, you spent a lot of time thinking about this, you know, and we're all taxpayers. You pay more taxes than some of us do, obviously, so we understand your concern.
While we're on the food issue, it's kind of funny that you brought that up, because I didn't really understand POTS, you know, responses completely to understand more. So I did a little more in-depth research to see where the money is going in that. And so if I can share something, I've just got...
Well, let me just ask if Norm's done that for the moment. You okay?
On meals? Well,
or anything else quickly, because we do have to move along and other people may have questions.
Yeah. Well, every company has a VFP, a valuable final product. My valuable final product is a repaired car. The bus system's valuable final product is ridership. Everything should revolve around the ridership. That's what we're selling. If we had a corn dog business, it'd be the corn dogs. My only concern is that our product is getting lower. We are on a terrible trend, and I didn't include this, but each year our ridership is going down, but our budget is going up. Since I've been on the board in 2015, our rides was $3.04 a ride. In 2017 with your projected, that's why I asked for the numbers, it's $3.96 per ride. That's a 30% increase. If this was a private company or corporation, every one of us in here would be fired. It's a terrible trend. That's just my concern. And so when I seen the budget items, if we're not addressing how we could fix this, I know a lot of them. I mean, we're talking morale and stuff like that. But out of the ridership, and I know we're going to spend $60,000 on a couple of markets, but there's so many free things here. I had one of my friends, Spencer Butterfield, who played for Utah State. He was in a marketing class, and we got the university there. He took CarSmart, and then they did an analysis of how we could do marketing, engage, and stuff like that, and it didn't cost me anything. So there's a lot of avenues like that we could use without spending the money and the resources of it. But so when I look at these, every line item, I affect how that's going to affect the ridership. So, I guess.
And those are good questions. And before I let Todd answer, we had this discussion a little bit. I remember we had this discussion when we met at Hiram City Hall, whenever that meeting was earlier this year. And that's kind of a policy issue. I mean, Todd could run the buses close to the university only and increase ridership dramatically. You know, so that's kind of us. If we want him to increase ridership, we say, hey, don't cover Millville or Nibley as much, you know, because that costs more per rider than driving around Utah State University in a mile radius. This is my simplistic understanding of it.
You're right.
Yeah. Anything else you want to add?
No, I think that's it. I just want to caution the board. Not caution. I want you to make sure that you're making good policy decisions, because Roger's right on. If we chase ridership, if that's what you want to do, we can create a plan for you that will grow ridership. We can do that. And it will push a lot of people to the university, and we'll put more and more service on the routes that are already performing. We'll put 15-minute service on. And we can do that. I just want you to understand that comes at a cost of what originally this system was created for, was for the low-income, disabled, and seniors. And so, just understand there's a cost that you're changing the demographic who you're serving. So ridership is a thing that I agree with you. That's something our end product, but there's a balance there, and I don't know what that is. That's something that we're in the process to try and help you discover, but just know those trade-offs there.
So is it appropriate, I don't mean to jump into the discussion, but I think Norm made a really excellent point in terms of the fact that I remember asking that question when we were talking about the short range transit plan. Are we as a transit district about exposure, or are we about efficiency, basically? Because if you put more buses where you have more people, that in my mind is more efficient. Is it appropriate for us, and I'm looking at Ron a little bit because he's my guru on our management strategy, to, in the future, say we don't want to spend any more than this many dollars per rider as a sort of, you know, between this much and this much per rider and figure it out in there? Is that a benchmark that is appropriate for us to talk about?
I think what we've done is we've accepted, and I want to get the language right here, we've accepted the short-range transit plan. It's not implemented.
That is correct.
But the short-range transit plan has given us options to look at as a board and to see where we want to really put our resources, okay? Because the resources, where we choose to put our resources, will affect the budget.
Right, correct. Okay?
So as
and ridership.
And ridership. So where we choose to put those resources will determine the budget and what we end up doing. So if we want to go, if we say, okay, wait a minute, we've looked at the short range transit plan, we really want to increase ridership, so we focus on that, then that's the direction the board will take. But if we want to go out and say, okay, no, wait a minute, you know, we want it to reach everyone, mm-hmm. you know, and we had, Sally, you brought up the ADA bus thing, you know,
right.
And I learned something that weekend. I didn't know that we were geared toward just specific meeting ADA requirements. So we're looking at that to see how that will affect ridership, and that will affect cost. But that services the community that can't really get to the bus stop. So we as a board, we will establish what these parameters are.
But we probably aren't sustainable if we only go after, we probably have to have a combination.
Yes.
We have to have, you
There's
know, some sort
mix.
Of melt. But
the
what I, history. Yeah, for, but I assume that right now, because we haven't really talked about the short range transit plan, we've just accepted it, we haven't, you know, sort of gone from 30,000 a little lower to try and decide which areas we want to focus on. This budget represents business as usual based on what we are currently doing, correct?
That's how I'm looking at it.
Yeah.
And we gave the staff some time that they asked for to analyze at the staff level all of the recommendations from the consultant in the short-range transit plan. Staff would come back to us and say, here's what was recommended. Here's what we're comfortable with at the staff level, or here are the options, whatever we want to do. And that's yet to happen probably next year.
Can I say one thing to Gene's? The only thing I would say as far as business as usual is, yes, Norm's right. There's money in there for marketing research. There's money in there for a voter survey.
Right.
We still think that we have, through the short-range transit plan, heard from several voices. But we think there's some other voices out there that we need to understand. The voters is one. That the short-range transit plan was not designed to engage the voters in understanding what are you willing to support, and especially with the sales tax measure potentially that the county's doing, I think it's important for this board. I would encourage this board to understand that. I want to understand that better. I agree with Norm that we could engage interns or other sources to do marketing. That's definitely an option, and so we're not against that. We just feel that we might get something different with a professional firm that does this, but we want to take it from the 30,000 foot level, because we've heard things like you need apps, you need a real-time app. Well, we have two real-time apps, so what are we not doing? On every single bus stop, we have a sign that points them, they can QR code to the app. Man, what are we not doing? And we hear, as I talk to folks, I'm hearing, man, we're not as convenient as we used to be. We're seeing a change. The parking lot at the transit center is completely full. The church parking lot is completely full. We've been doing a survey the last month of why are you going there? And folks are saying, the route's not convenient enough for me. Route 11 is not convenient enough. Society is changing a little bit. And I'm the first to admit, if you would have talked to me 10 years ago, I would have been pretty confident that I could come back with a solution of what society is looking at. But things are changing. And what we heard at the Growth Summit was that folks don't want a big house. They want to live in a more dense neighborhood. They want access to transit. They want it to be more convenient. I'm the first is here to say I want to understand society better. I don't know it as well as I used to. I don't understand the newer generation or my generation that's getting used to that. And so that's why we put that in there. But there are other avenues. You're right, Norm. We could take that out and go a different approach.
Todd, I don't understand QR codes, so just FYI.
Norm, thank you. We need to move on to Eric, can we?
Well, one more.
Okay, very quickly then, please.
Yeah, I'll be quick. But our analysis on the ridership, nothing's changed. It's the same corn dog. We got the same routes, the same stuff. Everything's the same. That's my argument.
Gas prices are not what they were a few years ago. That's one difference.
The society's changing.
But in 2015, I mean, our budget is higher, but our routes are, and ridership is down. That's what I'm saying. If the short-range transit is supposed to fix how more people are going to eat this corn dog, then we should move it closer. But our ridership and our expenses, we're doing the same thing, but we're getting less people eating it. That's my argument on that.
Okay. Todd and the staff are going to analyze that. They're going to look at the short-range transit plan, bring back options and recommendations next year. Eric, please.
So just on the, like I said, I was just looking more detail to understand the food thing, you know, and the budget there. So I've got a more full detailed thing here of where money's being spent. So if you look on this first page there, this is the money being spent for, like, the employees' summer barbecue, their Christmas dinner, everything, the safety meeting, foods that they give. That's on the first page. It shows the totals. Then if you go to the second page, it's going to show us spend on board meals, what we've spent on board.
You're not recommending our Christmas party next month, are you?
Maybe. Okay, just ask. But then on the third page is what's considered, the third page and all the rest of the way through is what's considered other meals, which that really kind of caught me a little bit by surprise, because it looks like every month in each week there's like two or three different entities going out to eat each week, every month. Which adds up to quite a bit of dollars. And I did find something interesting that could be a little bit troubling with that budget. So my Excel sheet got stuck. And so I had the MIS guys come down and help me a little bit with fixing the Excel sheet. As they got reading the other meals and looking at the pages, they go, "This pisses me off. They're spending that much on these individual meals, like one or two people going out to eat and that." I thought, well, you know, if the public sees this, how would they react looking at that amount of money being spent on one or two people, you know? As you can see on there, kind of a little more detail, you know, which can be a little bit troublesome. So I just wanted to give more detail, save you the time from, you know, but I found it ironic that we kind of brought this up because I wanted to look into it further after the questions were asked and your responses. So that gives you more details on that. So I don't know.
Eric, just one quick question to refresh my memory. What's page one again?
Page one, as you can see on there, it says safety meeting food. So like for all the employees, you know, they go in January to we get invited to that, like that Riverwoods Conference Center. That's where the safety meetings, they hold the safety meeting each month, and they provide like chips and drinks. And then in the summer, they have a barbecue for the employees, and that's all on page one. That's the cost of page one. Page two is, so that's what safety meeting food is, and then page two is board meals. And then from the rest on is what's considered other meals where you kind of just go out to eat. You know, like USU has a policy that, if, say, like when I go to Salt Lake or Tooele for the day to work on an extension site for that, I don't get a meal comp at all unless you're over 12 hours. You know, you pay your own. They don't comp you a meal or anything. So, you know, and maybe that's something we look at. But it just seemed a little excessive on the other meals by far.
So these other meals, we don't know the purpose or who ate the meal,
well,
do we?
Well, we probably could be. I guess
yeah, we keep records on it. We could definitely give you the purpose there.
So we could probably find that.
So I guess we have a couple options here, as I understand it. We'll defer to Todd for a quick response in a minute. But so we have the prerogative, as I understand it, to reduce that budget line item for meals and just reduce it to whatever we think is appropriate, or we accept the recommendation of the staff or the explanation of the staff. So do you want to respond quickly, Todd?
No, I think that's a great response. I mean, anything in the budget, we're making a budget request based on what we think is what we need to do to successfully execute and achieve our budgetary goals. But Roger's right. The board has all...
When you're discussing business for a lunch, it's appropriate that you have to maybe order something in. And secondly, employee morale is something pretty important in a service industry.
Well, I can tell you, to Eric's point, we have a policy like anyone else, and we have to have documentation. There has to be a business purpose. And so we keep records on all of this, and it has to be authorized. And so if you want, we can run an audit and do it and provide all that paperwork. I don't have a problem with that.
Where's the line item that we're talking about? What page is that on in the budget, the food or whatever we call this?
It's meals. So you're on page 4.
Page 4.
Under expenditures, you're about halfway down. Meals, it's, so you see the...
Oh, yeah, okay. So the current year budget's 24,000, projected to spend 22,000. The budget for next year is down 1,000 to 23. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, so if somebody's really concerned, is there enough concern? We could simply say we want to reduce that by $2,000 or $3,000 and make the staff live with it, or do we want to accept our general manager's recommendation? Feel strongly about that one line that Eric does. Norm. Okay, you want to make a motion? On what do you want it to be? What's reasonable?
So I'd make a motion that we drop it by maybe $10,000.
So your recommendation is that line item be maxed at $13,000 rather than the $23,000 as proposed. That is a motion. That's a motion. Do we have a second to that motion?
I second it.
We have a second to that motion. Do we have further discussion on the motion?
So go ahead.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Amber.
Give me some examples of, like, what would be, like, $64 to tandoori oven or whatever. Is that just... two employees going out to lunch talking about work?
To get into the specifics, I don't know, but I can tell you generally. So again, like, maybe during the winter season we're removing snow and the guys have worked 14 hours removing snow, then there may be three or four of them that go and grab a breakfast or go out to a lunch. Maybe that we're meeting with, I met with Val Potter the other day, and we sat down and we were talking about some transportation issues. Subcommittee at the legislature, and so I bought him a bagel and a drink, you know. So it just depends. There's a variety of reasons. It may be a planning session. Again, we do have a policy in place. There does have to be a business purpose, and there has to be proper paperwork filled out.
Because the only experience I have is from the sheriff's office, and I know, like, with us, it was... you have to be out of the county, and you have to be out of the county for so many hours before you can even get a $7 per diem for a lunch or a $10 per diem for a lunch. I mean, it was really strict. Are the guidelines that strict? Like, it's so much...
Not quite that strict.
And
maybe what would be helpful is we could bring the policy
for the board, and you guys can look at the policy. I'm willing to do whatever you want to do.
It does just seem like a lot of little stuff. Like,
so that's the other option.
I have another option.
Go ahead.
Rather than trying to take a stab at saying, okay, let's just reduce it by $10,000, I say let's bring the policy before the board, let's restructure the policy so it meets the needs of the board, and then approve the policy for use. I said, what's been spent in 2016 and even 2017 has been spent. What it sounds to me like what we need to do is relook at the policy in terms of how it affects the budget and say, if it's too loose, then we need to tighten it up. And then so for the 2018 budget, we tighten it up and then we see how it works. If the policy works and the expenditures go down, they will go down based on the policy. And I'd leave it at that.
Okay.
Cutting it 10 grand, I'm looking at what you're doing. You cut it 10 grand, you just cut out everything out of the other account.
I agree. I think if you do just willy-nilly just say $10,000, we don't know how it affects the... I agree with morale. I think some of those things are really good for people, but I think just saying 10,000 right off the top, I think it has to, the policy.
Okay, so we do have a motion and a second on the floor to reduce that by 10,000 to 13,000. We have another suggestion. I think we could have a substitute motion if the second agreed.
So do we have to pass this meal budget today? Can we table this and then review it?
Sure.
Because that'd give us time to look at it and see.
Sure.
Well, we don't. We do have to pass the budget December.
On December 8th.
So anything on here we have to pass
today?
We
have to pass it.
No, they need tentative approval, but we can make adjustments at the December 8th meeting. Can we not, Curtis? Curtis had a comment.
At this point in time, the law requires a tentative budget to be adopted in the month of November. In other words, it's the 2 months before the end of the fiscal year, which is December 31st. So we have to pass it in the month of November, a tentative budget. What that does is then it makes it available to the public for public comment. At that time, any public can formulate their comments to come to a public hearing that must be held in December.
Correct.
And so that public hearing is going to be scheduled on December 8th, because that's what the board has adopted for your board meeting. And at that public hearing, then any public can voice any comments. And at that meeting, also, the board has chosen that since we're only having one meeting in December, that you would need to adopt a final budget at that meeting. And that's when the budget goes into play to be effective January 1. Also, during the course of any point in time in January, the budget can be amended up or down for any expenditure area as the board deems fit, but that would also have to have a public hearing with it before any adjustment of the budget, either up or down.
An advertised public hearing.
An advertised public hearing.
Budget up or down, not down,
so,
do you?
If you increase or decrease revenues or expenditures, you have to have a public hearing on the budget.
So I would wonder if, because I do agree that the policy review and adjustment are going to get at the challenges that you're having without us having to change the budget right now. And if indeed we get it to the point where we change the policy and it's $5,000 or $7,000 less than what they have in the current budget, that money just goes back into our cash reserves, and then we can adjust the budget for 2019 lower based on the experience we've had with the new policy.
I would agree with that.
But I do know that we have to approve a tentative budget tonight. We have to approve a budget in December that can go into effect in January. That does not mean that we have to spend every penny that's in every category of the budget. It just gives us the lines on the playing field in either way, and then the policies help us massage that back and forth. Does that make any sense at all?
Totally. So we have suggestions from other board members. We have a motion and a second on the floor, so we can vote on that, up or down, or we can leave it in there for now, give tentative approval and final approval, but at the January meeting, we want to take a look at that policy.
Yeah, I like Ron's idea. I mean,
the policy will help solidify what we're looking for.
Because there are some concerns, legitimate concerns and questions. I think the staff can probably answer those given time, but they'll bring the policy back. We'll take a look. So, given that, those suggestions, and what I hear is a sense of board members, do you want to withdraw that motion in the second for now? And we'll leave it as is, but we'll take a hard look at it the first of the year.
Yeah,
policy was. I think we can do that, Robert's rules wise, can we?
I think of what's happened here is the way this board is supposed to function. Some ideas have come up with some questions about things, and I think Ron's idea about the policy, that's is the only way that we can really govern, not govern, but recommend policy. So I think table it, approve it, table it, and then next year we can work on the policies and then make the changes as necessary.
Do you want to
move? I have one request. Can we have that policy in the December packet so we have the month of December into January to review this?
Maybe we could put it out just a little bit after the meeting. Yeah, we can get it to you.
So there is a meals policy already on the books.
So do we need a motion to review the policy in January?
The party of the motion just needs to withdraw their motion.
So if,
yeah,
if we
they
vote.
Withdrew it, but I think we can just direct the staff to bring that policy to us along with some explanation.
We can put it out in December.
Well, I don't
you're
think
not, you're not going to have a packet in December because
okay. Any questions on that? We've got the motion and the second withdrawn. We've given direction to the staff to bring that to us for review in January.
Given our discussions, I would like to move that we approve the tentative budget.
I agree. Second motion.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. A little clarification, and this is...
So are we going to talk more about professional fees, or is you proposing we pass the $374,000 in professional fees? So we're going to approve the $75,000, look at the university lane and all this other? Is that what's being said?
I would like to discuss that a little bit more.
So we do have a motion and a second to approve this budget tentatively. And as I understand what Todd told me, and help us, Curtis, the things that we need to commit to are to continue the benefit package that we have now. That's kind of final approval because they have to commit to public employees' health plan, which most local government entities have right now before December 8th, and to the retirement program you have in lieu of Social Security.
And then two full-time drivers.
Two full-time drivers, they need approval now. So that part of it, can we make that final and everything else is tentative? Can that be added to your motion?
That would be fine. To your comment, Norm, my understanding would be that if we had some serious questions about elements in the budget, like the $75,000 for the university, we could remove it at the December meeting. Is that correct? Is that correct, Curtis?
But if we approve it, does that mean the count, this, we're approving that we can go ahead and spend that, though?
No, it doesn't start till, this is just the tentative, this is like approving the proposed budget, but it's by law that we have to do it. And so we have to approve it in its infant form, and then we approve it in final form, however that final form looks, in December.
You can still adjust it, Norm.
Yes.
Well, can we just
you can
pull propose, it
you can make motions in the December meeting to adjust it. If you
so we would be discussing this like more in December.
Right. Okay. We'll still discuss it in December. So this is just tentative, so it's not the final thing. It doesn't give them, we have those issues that need to be addressed that we're doing there. But as far as what you're talking about, we can still make those adjustments in December before we pass the final budget.
And so
can we do that without a public hearing, Curtis?
No. That will be a public hearing.
Oh, okay. All right.
Norm, one more quick comment, then we're going to move on the motion.
So we're also going to approve. We've just raised our salaries so much in the last. Most people don't get that much. And I know I'm affected by health insurance. I pay $1,000 for my family, but that's with the $5,000 per person deductible. And most companies, independent companies, with Obamacare, it messed everybody up. They just kind of changed their health care package. But it doesn't seem like we're taking that consideration. We're just going to give them all more just because Obamacare.
Can we ask that question to Todd? How much?
The health care package hasn't changed at all.
The cost has not changed.
The cost has. The cost has gone up a little bit.
How much? What percent? You know.
What was that percent?
Well,
the
I
previous
have, I have
year,
it
had gone up
And so we saw an increase this year. But yeah, as far as the height of the plan and those things, those are the same.
So is that increase being covered completely by CBTD or employees asking to pay?
Right now, we're proposing that it be covered completely by CBTD. And again, the recommendation of why we're putting that in the budget is because when you look at wages, our wages are, I'll give you an example for the drivers. The county, for example, pays about $17.50 an hour for their school bus drivers. We're about $12.50. The reason that we put it into benefits is because we survey our drivers, we survey our employees, and they said that they would rather have benefits versus a wage increase. And so we're responding to their needs. And when you look at our turnover at the full-time level, we just don't have that unless people move out of state or violate the policy in such a way that they're terminated. But and so that's what we've done for that reason, is we've responded that way to try and meet their needs based on what they tell us. And so that's why that proposal's in there. But again, we look at that every year and take that in consideration of saying, should we still do this or shouldn't we? We had that discussion again this year, and we'll have that discussion again next year.
Well, I broke that down underneath my here. So what we're proposing is to increase the drivers by $1,742 is what we're going to increase, and the management by $2,956 is according to the numbers I got from. That's why I asked them.
But that's probably based on a percentage, and the higher the salary, the percentage adds more money. Is that not correct?
That's per person. I mean,
so we can keep this thing. Yeah, we do have a motion and a second on the floor. I'd like to act on that. And again, I think we have opportunities to ask the staff questions individually over the next 3 weeks until December 8th. But at some point, we've got to have a little confidence in the staff, and I have complete confidence, frankly, in the staff and our general manager. So I'm going to ask you to go ahead and act on that motion and express appreciation for the questions that have been raised, and we're going to get at some of those questions. And if we have other questions based on policy, we'll deal with those next year at our meetings. I think that's fine. So we have a motion and a second on the floor. We've had discussion. Any quick further discussion on the motion on the floor to accept this preliminarily, recognizing that we're for sure going to approve the two new drivers that they have to get in place, and keeping fringe benefits with the same entities that provide those fringe benefits. We're not going to change that. All in favor of that motion, please raise your hand. Any opposed to the motion to approve? Do we have any abstentions? So we recognize the nays. Thank you very much. Okay, that motion passed. So that's it for our budget discussion tonight. Thank you all for that. Board chair report. I don't have anything to report. General manager.
You want to be done?
I think some people have to leave right now. So if it's not urgent.
It's not urgent.
Okay. Anything else? Any other business we ought to raise? We'll adjourn this meeting, and I'll actually use this thing. Thank you all. Appreciate your service.